So, if I go, Owen, Deborah, Tom. Oh, don't worry about it.
This is boring.
I'm doing it too. I've decided I'm now conversive to drive first 3 weeks.
I did the first 2 weeks and I stopped for this weekend.
Oh, what is
it? Well, I think you deserve it.
Right, we'll kick off. Apologies for the delay. We're going to start without Stella. She is within 10 minutes walk. We've had a call from her, so she will join us by the time the other three have spoken. So thank you so much for joining us for this session on the art of opposition, looking at how the party should set about holding this government to account, learning lessons from previous Labour opposition periods as well. We've got a fantastic lineup of guests to stimulate our discussion. As I say, Stella Creasy will be joining us in a few moments, one of the most prominent Labour backbenchers when it comes to setting the agenda and holding government to account. We're going to hear from Owen Jones, writer and journalist, whose writing will be known to you all. Then Deborah Mattison, who has been supporting the Labour Party and commenting on its performance since she was a key part in Labour's preparations for victory in the 1990s. And then we'll be hearing from Tom Baldwin, who was the chief media advisor to Ed Miliband for most of the previous Parliament and has a few scars on his back from that experience. So let's kick off without Stella, who was going to be the first. Owen's very kindly agreed to go first. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here on this esteemed panel. It's a shame Stella's not here because I was going to use her as a prop at the beginning. I've shared many a platform with Stella over the years. We agree and disagree on many things, and one of the things that's been a bone of contention is my dress sense, which she believes is questionable. She was actually vindicated on that one issue last week when GQ named me the 9th worst dressed man in Britain. However, I don't know if the Shadow Secretary of State for Scotland's here, because he came 5th, so... You know, there you go. It's fantastic to be here, and look at this crowd. And it is incredible to learn, although he will now hit me if I'm wrong, the Fabians are at a record level of membership. And that is a story we're seeing across the left. We are a vibrant mass movement brimming with enthusiasm. And we should not forget that. And what we need to do is harness that enthusiasm. And that doesn't just mean turning up like the sad losers we are to Saturday morning conferences. Not saying there's anything wrong with it, I'm here too. However, we need to take that enthusiasm out into every single community in this country. We've got to go out and organise. We're not here to pat ourselves on the back and talk to ourselves. We've got to go out there to the millions of people out there. And with Labour membership surging and with other movements like this also increasing so dramatically, that is a historic opportunity. So don't let it go. Every single person in this room has to make that commitment that they will go out into their community and organise. And if we do that, we will be in a far better position to win in 5 years than otherwise. Now, I actually think, one thing before I go on about the art of opposition, etc., the one thing we need, above all else at the moment, is unity. And actually, on domestic issues, the Labour Party, I believe, has not been this united for a generation. And actually, you know, the one thing we can't have is people, who I won't name, squabbling and infighting instead of focusing all of their fire on a Conservative government that is inflicting so much devastation on this country. Right, I'll finally get on to the question now. Now, look, this is a bizarre situation we're in politically. Normally, when somebody becomes leader, they have years of ambition, years of preparation. They've been maybe at least a shadow minister, if not a serving minister. They have this big professionalised team around them for many, many years. They have lots of experience of dealing with the mainstream media. They have a network of sympathetic journalists. None of that applies in this situation whatsoever. Jeremy Corbyn stood to have a debate, and he was from, I don't think he's someone who's shown much, you know, he's not someone full of personal careerism or ambition, and he was parachuted into this position with the biggest mandate of any Labour leader in history. Something a year ago, if any of us had suggested that would happen, we'd probably think a comet hitting the Earth would have been more likely. And that is a situation that's happened. And it's such a unique moment in political history. So we've got to start from that basis. Now, for me, and I say this a lot, so if anyone's heard me say this, I apologise. You can heckle me if you want. But most people out there don't think about left or right. They think about issues to be addressed in a way that's that's my mum at the back, probably. In a way that's convincing and coherent, that resonates with their experiences, and that is told in a language that they understand. Now, the big task of Labour is to build a coalition. And that's a coalition of middle-income and low-income people. That's the majority of people in society, working people, the people that this party was founded to represent and champion and articulate their hopes and dreams and aspirations in Parliament, in local government, and of course in government as a whole. Now, that means people for whom life is so hard and so difficult, for whom life is becoming ever more difficult, people in poverty, people who are struggling to get an affordable home. And it means people in the middle. Now, the real middle Britain. Now, the real middle Britain isn't people with two homes and three cars. It means you're on about 26 grand a year. Life is sometimes okay, but it's getting ever tougher and more insecure. People who are worried about the future of their children. Now, to give an example of how we build that coalition, take housing. We have a situation in this country where 5 million people languish on social housing waiting lists, deprived of that basic need, that basic right, an affordable home for them and for their children as well. Now, this government, as we know, is devastating social housing, flogging it off, abolishing secure tenancy. So we have to argue for new council housing in the spirit of Nye Bevan, who said that he wanted to recreate the lovely features of the English and Welsh village where doctors and butchers lived next door to each other. Good quality council housing that creates jobs, skilled jobs, that brings down the housing benefit bill and the social housing waiting list as well. And then there's private renting. 11 million of us now in the private rented sector, stripped of security, with rip-off rents that so many people can't afford. In this city, 1 in 4 Londoners now claiming housing benefit. Housing benefit not lining the pockets of tenants, but all too often rip-off private landlords charging rents people simply can't afford. So we want to regulate private housing and also, as well as that, put controls on rents so people can afford them. But then there's a third element, home ownership. Home ownership under this government has been in a state of collapse for so many people. 250,000 fewer people own their own homes. Hi, Stella. Quarter of a million fewer. For those under 34, it's in a total state of meltdown. The dream of home ownership for those people, a dream which seems completely unrealizable. So that's an example of how we can build that coalition that can unite millions of people for council housing, private rented sector, and home ownership as well. Now, the task of Labour as well is all of the fights and struggles we've got in the coming months is to show we're not just against what the government's doing, but we've got a genuinely inspiring alternative vision as well. Now, take austerity, a word all of us, I think, in this room are familiar with. During the leaders' debate in the last general election, the most commonly Googled phrase was, "What is austerity?" After 5 years of this government. Now, we laugh. Maybe out of bitterness, but no, we laugh. But the reality is, the government, the Tories, don't speak in words like that. They talk, for example, about the right to buy when they're flogging off social housing. Oh, you oppose people's rights, do you? That sort of language. We have to use the language of common sense, but we're not just anti-austerity. We've got to have a vision of a different sort of economy. And John McDonnell's amassed this team of experts like the Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz and people like Professor Mariano
Mazzucato. So we've got the opportunity to build a genuine, inspiring alternative on the economy. So we're not just saying what we're against, but what we're for as well. We need optimism. Optimism above all else. We don't want this miserable view of Britain. We want an optimistic view of the country that we could build together. Let's borrow from Ronald Reagan, of all people, Morning in America. Let's have the same, without the policies, but let's have the same optimistic message as well. We've got to have clear, sharp messages. Now, one of the problems with the Miliband era is they jump from message to message. The squeezed middle, the promise of Britain, pre-distribution, one nation, together, we could go on, the cost of living crisis. Unfortunately, the reality is the Tories have clear, sharp messages. I'm going to get heckled by him in a minute. Clear, sharp messages they repeat over and over again. And I'm not going to repeat them because that's doing their work for them. But you all know off by heart what they are. And that is the point. And some of you would have knocked on doors and hear Tory attack lines being fed back to you. Labour has to have a clear vision it repeats over and over and over again. Now, it's time to wrap up. So just to say... That speech today by Jeremy Corbyn is exactly the sort of approach Labour now has to have. A clear vision on domestic policy, optimistic, inspiring for millions. And let's just end with this. People say about power versus principles, it's a false dichotomy. What is the point of a vision unless it can inspire enough people to elect a government to change this country? That is our ambition. That is our unifying hope. Together, united as a party, that's what we have to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Owen, thank you very much. And now let's turn to Deborah Matheson.
Great, thank you very much. Actually, the thing that impresses me about Owen isn't his dress sense, but the fact that I've got this great big girly swap page of notes. He just calmly sat down and wrote down nine things. Stood up. He stood up and said them, and then when he sat down, he just drew a line at the end. Well done, very good. Okay, and I agree with loads of the things that he said. Actually, I agree with what a fantastic thing it is for the babies to get a crowd like this. It's the biggest I've ever seen. I've done these conferences a lot. And I agree with a lot. I would love now to talk to you about the evil Tories, how we need to nail them on this, that, and the other. And I agree with a lot of it. And you'd all clap uproariously, and I'd feel great, and you'd feel great, but I'm not going to do that, I'm afraid. Thank you. Can you hear me now? Yes. Okay. So, what I said was I was not going to... I'll move on. What I am going to do is say that I think the truth is this, if I'm answering the question, what makes a great opposition? A great opposition is about one thing and one thing only, and that is the degree to which you are seen as a likely winner. It's the degree to which people believe that you are a government in waiting and that you can win. And it's only when you have that belief that you have the license to be heard. Why do you think it was, and I can see there are some people in this room like me who are old enough to remember the long Tory government led by Mrs. Thatcher. Why did she have the right to do the things that she did? Why did she have that license? It was because there wasn't a viable opposition for much of the time that she was Prime Minister. If you don't look as if you can win, you are no threat. What that means is that when you protest, you are talking to yourself because nobody else is listening. So, for me, the key question now is, does Labour look like a winner? Okay, let's look at the polls. We are somewhere between 5 and 10% worse than we were in the early months, the same time in Ed Miliband's leadership. Now, I'm going to talk through why that is in a minute, but okay, we know the polls are rubbish. We know that they are wrong. What we do know is how they're wrong. We know that they are wrong in that they are overstating Labour at the moment. So what you're seeing in the polls right now, frankly, is probably worse than the real situation. It's probably better than the real situation. So the picture is probably worse than that. So why is that? Okay, last summer, after the election, I was commissioned to do a piece of work that sat alongside Margaret Beckett's review. It's also unpublished, actually. And what it showed, yes, maybe that's a good thing, what it showed, as well as other studies that were published at the same time, was that basically there were two reasons why Labour lost. There were two main challenges, and these were perceptions around Labour's economic competency and perceptions around the quality of its leadership. The current polling suggests that, if anything, things have got worse since then. Now, addressing those issues isn't nice to have. It is absolutely vital. I've been doing this stuff for a long time, 30 years, I think, and I don't think that it is possible for a party that is not thought to be economically competent to win. I have never seen that happen. It's only when this problem that Labour had it was addressed in the 1990s that Labour was in a position to win. Similarly with leadership, I don't know if any of you follow the wonderful Mike Smithson's political betting site, but he recently published a fascinating chart that looked at every election since 1979, and there was a precise and direct correlation between leader favourability and winning. The party whose leader is more highly rated always wins, always. There has never been, ever, ever, an example of that not happening. But it's more than that. It's more than that. As Owen said, it's about inspiring. In the work that we did last summer, one of the things that we did was to show lots and lots of photographs of people. And we said to the people in the focus groups, now that the Conservatives have won, what sort of person will thrive? And they looked at all these photographs, and we got them to point to the people that they felt would thrive under this Tory government. And what did they do? They picked people a little bit like themselves. They picked the families that were a bit like theirs. They picked the older people that were a bit like them. They picked the kids that were a bit like them. We then asked them the same question. Okay, had Labour won, who would have thrived? And they couldn't answer the question. They found it really difficult to answer the question. And in the end, they resorted to picking out the people who they thought looked as if they were down on their uppers, the people who thought that they were on welfare. What we did was to create a situation where ordinary people, the kinds of people Owen was talking about, not rich people, just ordinary people on 26 grand a year, didn't feel that we were going to deliver anything for them. So the problem is that it's not enough to know what's wrong with government, important though that is. A successful opposition has to persuade voters about its own agenda. It has to tell a compelling story about what it believes in, what it would do, and what that means for them. And voters have to be inspired by what they hear. So, where are we now? Well, okay, it's early days, but I'm really sorry to say that the evidence so far does not suggest that we're making headway on those key measures. In fact, I would say we are worse off than we were. And that is before we get the polls adjusted, which will take away their current leaning towards Labour. That is before we get the boundary changes, which currently are rather favourable to Labour due to a brilliant piece of negotiation by Labour some years ago. Fabian's own research tells us that the new voters that Labour has to win, 4 out of 5 of them voted Tory in 2010. So that's what we're dealing with. So, it's a real problem. I think that there's more than that, though. I use a slightly different credibility measure, because in the work that I do in my day job at Britain Thinks, I work with and advise a lot of different businesses. I work with a lot of different charities. I work with campaigning organisations. Listening to them as they're planning their strategy over the coming years, what I'm hearing again and again is that they are all focusing their assumptions on the belief that Labour will be out of power for a minimum of 10 years. Some of them are working on 15, some of them are working on 20. All of their efforts are going on how they can influence the Tory government to do what they want, rather than thinking about how they can influence Labour, because they feel that Labour is irrelevant. So, do we look like winners? I'm afraid I'd say not. And I think that means we can oppose as much as we want to, but nobody is listening. Sorry.
I think I should say thank you, Deborah, but I'm not.
I thought thought I'd get booed, actually.
Some home truths. Tom, let's look at the last Parliament and what went right as well as what went wrong, but what did we learn? Can you give it a yank?
Well, to start with a statement of the sort of bleeding obvious, the reason why we're having this discussion, the reason why we are in opposition is because we lost. And we lost badly. And when you lose, like we did in May, you know that there's going to be an almighty trashing of everything that's gone before. Indeed, within days of that defeat, hours, there was a stampede to say that Ed Miliband's positioning was too left-wing, too anti-business, too weak on the deficit. And then within a few weeks, there was this counter-stampede declaring that Ed was not left-wing enough, too tough on the deficit, too soft on business, too, what's the line, austerity light. To those of us involved in the campaign, it felt a bit like being one of these sort of aggravated road accidents where, first of all, you get knocked down by a car and then it sort of reverses back over you. but it is right that when you lose, people demand change. And clearly, what Labour was doing at the last election did not work. And I agree with Owen's criticisms of the ever-shifting message and in last Parliament, you know, each one is a separate scar on my back. But we need to spend a lot more time than we have done so far discussing why we lost, facing up to difficult questions, which I think were largely ducked in 2010, and difficult questions which too many in the party have largely avoided altogether in the past few months. But this discussion is about effective opposition. And my argument today is that effective opposition, and by that I mean an opposition ready to be an effective government, needs to balance change with a measure of continuity. Now, we argued about this a lot in the Leader's Office during the last Parliament. Many of the team felt the reason Ed had stood was to move on from New Labour. Some thought he had a mandate, even a duty, to define himself as much against the last government as against this one. Now, I don't recognise the caricature which some people have that Ed spent 5 years trashing New Labour. He didn't. But I'll say here what I said privately then, that failing to defend our message, our record, failing to defend our record with consistency and passion was a mistake. I'll tell you what it did. It helped a flimsy Osborneist lie that the Tories inherited this terrible mess from Labour, that, you know, spending on schools and hospitals in London meant Lehman Brothers in New York went bust. It allowed that lie to become concreted in as historical fact. It meant we failed to remind people often enough that our country has only ever made real progress through Labour governments, including the last Labour government. And it has seen Labour itself contributing to a general undermining of our brand. You wouldn't catch the Tories doing it. Look at how even in their most modernising phases, they still celebrate Thatcher and increasingly Major. You wouldn't catch the Tories doing it any more than you'd find a car manufacturer trying to sell you a new model with adverts saying all its recent cars have been crap. But that is what voters hear when three successive Labour leaders have, in different ways, spent their time telling the world what was wrong with Tony Blair. It is also what voters see when Blairites themselves act like no one has made any contribution to the cause of progress since June the 27th, 2007, the day the music died. And it's what voters know when too many people, I'm not saying Jeremy himself, but too many people around Jeremy Corbyn act as if the rot set in, not with Ed, or Gordon, or Tony, or John Smith, but with Neil Kinnock 33 years ago, a third of a century. If some of these people were car manufacturers, they would be making the Austin Allegro and trying to flog you that and say, that's what we call a car. Now, Andrew Harrop, our chair today, has been making a similar point about the need to secure the base of the 9 million people who voted Labour at the last election, rather than endlessly indulging the 500,000 who took part in the leadership contest. And I think we should all be asking this: how come one quarter of the people who voted Labour at the last election are now saying they're disinclined to do so? That's 1 in 4 in 7 months have gone. So I don't think this year zero approach to opposition is working. Now, it's right that New Labour started it, boxing in anyone who disagreed with them as old Labour and therefore automatically consigned to the past. But the fact that it did not put down deeper roots in the party is one of the reasons why, when New Labour lost its initial lustre, it was neither new nor identifiably Labour. And to trash the last 33 years as somehow an aberration from a true path of socialist purity, which never really existed, I think risks doing exactly the same. So we should, all of us, understand why people voted for Jeremy Corbyn. And we should all want to harness the energy of the new members who've come in and the fantastic wave of young people particularly. But we should also defend the achievements of the last government and Tony Blair. And we should feel proud of the way Gordon Brown handled the global financial crisis. And we should acknowledge the contribution Ed Miliband made in putting issues such as inequality, just coming up, inequality back on the agenda, and how we're right about what would happen if the Tories got back in the last election. So when George Osborne skids across the road on welfare cuts and tax credits, we should be shouting from the rooftops that this is what we warned would happen. Instead, we're back in year zero, not shouting from the rooftops, but shouting at each other. So successful oppositions, yes, they must learn the lessons of defeat, identify what we got wrong, offer change, and come to own the future. But successful oppositions also need to remember and celebrate what we got right. Distinguish better between baby and bathwater. Because we won't own the future if we're not at least on nodding terms with our own past.
Tom. And then finally, after catching your breath, Stella.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? Yeah. Okay. I need to tell Tom that I'm a golf driver. I don't know what he reads into that. If the Labour Party didn't exist today, would we invent it? There's no legal requirement to maintain us. Unless we can answer that question, are we wasting each other's time? Are we two bald men fighting over a comb? However your meetings may sometimes feel, political parties do not exist for the sake of it. They are the practical expression of our hopes for a different world. And in a democracy, they're successful when they are a vision many, not the few, can get behind. Choice between principle or power is no choice at all. Because whether a party of power or a party of protest, We won't change the world unless we are a party of purpose. Yet too much now rests on being united by what we are not. Mainly not being the Tories, sometimes not being the Nationalists, and God forbid being the Liberals. That doesn't make us the alternative government in waiting. It doesn't even really make us the opposition. It just makes us not them. Mocking those who voted for others only reinforces this problem. You can share all the Facebook statuses and memes you like. It doesn't speak to who we are or why anybody should care. And this is from the party that gave us Keir Hardie's sunshine of socialism, Nye Bevan's vision of the NHS, Harold Wilson's white heat of technology. But the truth is, when you take away what we all agree on, that we want Labour in Downing Street, there are now divisions that are real and profound. But here's the good news. Division can be healthy and constructive. Differences faced head on can help us answer those questions of why, what, and how we succeed again in making a difference. And whatever the papers or the Twitter sphere shout, the real divisions aren't of left or right, Blair or Corbyn. They are of radicalism versus conservatism. Between the tension of wanting to protect everything we think is precious and our ambition to provoke change in the world to come, of creating a new vision of Britain or trying to restore times long gone. So to have a clash of ideas, not a clash of individuals, I think we need more than just a rest from Twitter. We need to separate divisions over purpose that mean that we cannot be in the same political party, and divisions over process, arguments about how to get to our shared destination. Because public services, economic models, legislation, they're all processes to secure our purpose, not an end in themselves. And uncertainty about what we stand for and why is our Achilles heel with the British public. Throughout the last Parliament, we didn't reach a consensus on what our economic position should be until it was too late. Our last manifesto had no unfunded commitments in it, yet people still trusted the Tories more with their money. That's the party that made £25 billion worth of untrusted commitments and then accused us of economic incompetence. Recognising that the electorate made that choice is not easy, but they did so because they saw the Tories had a purpose. They made everything about reducing the deficit and the hard choices. Yes, Owen, let's say it, their long-term economic plan. Our purpose is to secure the best in each of us for the benefit of all of us, to be the difference between only some people prospering and everybody being able to contribute to our shared success, to achieve more together than we do alone. What does that mean in practice? Somewhere in my community, I believe there's a kid who could cure cancer. It's a belief that gets me out of bed in the morning, tackling my inbox, dealing with the 3 a.m. calls about bin collection. I relish my job because it's the chance to help find that route for him or her, because imagine how much better all our lives would be if they do that. We are more than not Tories. Yes, we know that markets fall short in delivering the changes that break down those barriers to success. But we are Labour because we put our faith in people instead, in being able to work together to tear down those inequalities. And that is an ambition that Hardie, Wilson, Attlee, Blair and Jeremy all share. But there are different ways of making it happen. I am an unashamed radical. I don't want to sit on the sidelines of globalisation, trying to shield the public from damage. I don't want to prop up failing institutions because they're better than nothing. No. I want to provoke change for the better and as quickly as possible, knowing that it will be hard to live with as it happens. I make the call that we can't stop progress. Instead, we've got to shape it so it rips up those barriers holding people back. That when someone invented a sat-nav, the days of the cabbie were long numbered before Uber came along. And the radical way forward is to find new ways of supporting those people affected, to diversify and thrive, not to write them or innovation off. To find new ways. Because 50 years ago, this country was dying of infectious diseases. We needed hospitals ready to take people with TB. Now we're a nation divided by long-term health conditions. To keep people well, not just wait until they get sick, of course we need to change the NHS. When people are developing complications in diabetes, but hospital beds are blocked with people who need social care, we can't stand still. To find new ways, because 30 years ago, the Cold War defined foreign affairs. But now suicide bombs and YouTube videos do. Those who plan deaths in Britain from 50,000 miles away. The plight of the Yazidi women and the antics of the Saudi Arabian government on our Facebook timelines. Our fight for human rights and peace cannot stop at our borders. To find new ways. Because 20 years ago, the best we could do in helping young people who wanted to start a business was young enterprise. In the 21st century, with people like Jamal Edwards around, that simply doesn't cut it. So instead of arguing about tuition fees for 50% of kids, let's aim higher. Let's ensure that every 18-year-old has the capital they need to get on, whether to study, to start a business, or learn a craft. But you see, here's the thing. I could be mistaken. So I want people to show me evidence of what works and why, and what doesn't. You think what I've said is wrong? Sorry, I do. You think what I've said is wrong? Brilliant. Work with me, and together we'll come up with something sharper, refined, possible, credible, and yes, radical. We need not to ignore these differences or punish them, but face them head on. And in doing so jointly, come up with something better. Because when I hear people say we've now reached an economic consensus, I think, hang on, have we? When did that happen? I know I have a lot of questions and concerns, and I bet you do too. No one has the preserve on being right. Not the Fabians, not Progress, not Co-op, not Momentum, not even Owen. But if we choose to work together in this way, we can bring out the best in each other. It's easier said than done to admit you might be wrong, that the world might be changing and it's hard to keep up. An open mind isn't easy, and nobody likes a clever clogs. But radical or conservative, don't be comfortable with the Henry Ford model of politics. You can have any view as long as it's mine. Rather than able to engage in the world in which the people we represent live, a public still unsure what our purpose is, let alone how we would achieve it, but thankfully still wanting to know. So let's not waste our time or theirs. Yes, let's disagree and debate, and then decide what we are for, to act on the purpose of Labour, forgetting the best out of each of us for the benefit of all of us. Because it's when we choose to work in our way, that's when we become a party not just worth voting for or campaigning for. That's when we become a party worth inventing in the first place. That is worth the fight. Thank you.
Thank you, Stella. The four fantastic contributions in their different ways. I am sure that they have stimulated a lot of thoughts from you. We will go straight to Q&A. Can I see where the mic holders are, just so I've got a feel? Right, okay. So I'm going to take one from each block, one question from each block. Can I see hands in that block? Who wants to go first? I've got someone very frantic in the front row I'll take here. And then while the mic's reaching her right at the front, we'll go in the middle. Any hands up? We'll go for the chap in the dark blue jumper in the middle there. And on the left, any on the left? And the lady in the front row. I'm being biased in the front row. I'll get to the back later. Yes, would you like to go? And could you say who you are first?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello.
Got you.
My name's Rona Topaz. I I was living in Scotland until June, and I'm a singer, choir leader, and political activist. And I wanted to bring up two points. The first being the SNP and the fact that when the referendum lost by 10%, there were a lot of disillusioned yes voters who hated Westminster and hated the Tories and wanted to show their support for the party that they felt represented their best interests, which was the SNP, which took away a large section of the Labour vote in the general election. No mention has been made of that. Then after the leadership change, I noticed there were a lot of Facebook groups springing up that were very much in support of Labour and Keita Dugdale and her work in Scottish Labour, but also the new Labour leadership. And a lot of support was coming back to Labour in Scotland, which hasn't been acknowledged. And also, 600,000 people have joined Labour. We've lost one in four voters who would have been inclined to vote Labour before the general election. That are, we've lost them now, but what about the 600,000 people that have joined
Great.
Since?
Thank you.
And I just wanted to make one more point. It isn't just young people who have joined the party, because there's a Facebook group of over 1,000 who are people like myself who are 50 plus.
Thank you very much. A key point on Scotland, but also the harnessing the new, the resource of so many new members. Right, where's the chap at the back? Yes, there you go, you've got your mic.
Hello, my name's Keir. I'm from Hull, an East Yorkshire Young Labour. Hooray, yeah, thank you. My question was just about kind of factionalism within the party. So obviously there's a debate going on at the moment, but the way that some members of parliament are acting, and you've got Momentum on the left, Progress on the right, these groups are only kind of in a way causing disunity and arguments within the party that aren't conducive to us winning any elections. It's just factional bickering, which is kind of selfish, because every second we don't spend focusing on tackling the Tories is a second somebody whose disadvantage is losing out. So my question really is, what are the methods and solutions for us being able to deal with this factionalism before it means that we don't have any realistic chance of winning the 2020 election? Thank you.
Brilliant. Great question. And then there was the woman in the front row.
Thank you for that comment up there. Like everybody here today, I would like to see...
Could you say who you are?
I'm sorry. My name is Linda Nye. I'm from Hillingdon. I feel that notwithstanding the differences in opinions, that the bottom line is that everybody wants to see better housing, better health, better education in for this country, and that's something that only really Labour is committed to giving across the board. I have joined Labour recently. I've joined the Fabians recently, following the disastrous result last year and my total disillusionment with the Tory policies. I'm here fired up, ready to go, ready to take the message of the Labour Party to the people around me who are primarily Tory voters, and I'm quite happy to be outspoken, to challenge views and so on. I need a clear message, though, and where can you help me? How can I get help in having that message? I want to be able to go and say to people, this is what Labour is going to do for education. This is what they're going to do for housing. This is what they're going to do for health. Very clear, simple messages that would help people like me hugely to go out and start, you know, moving people to this side.
Thank you very much. So, three very clear questions there: the SNP in Scotland, factionalism, and a clear message. Deborah, do you want to kick off?
The SNP point first. I didn't talk about them in my contribution, but one of the things that we did in the work that we did for the party immediately after the election looked at where we'd lost votes, and we spent some time in Scotland, in Edinburgh and Glasgow, listening to voters who'd chosen to abandon Labour and vote SNP. What I would say, actually, is that the very strong sense we got from that was that actually this was not about independence on the whole. This was about a very strong sense that Westminster had abandoned Scotland. And in fact, I did some work, in 2011, I think, ahead of the local elections in Glasgow, where I got the same thing. I was amazed at how hostile lifelong Labour voters were to the Labour Party. The feeling they had was that, you know, any successful politician, Labour politician, went south and kind of never looked back, and they felt completely abandoned. I think that's what the problem was. Is there a recovery? I suspect, actually, in electoral terms, it might get a bit worse before it gets better. I think the evidence is that, the Holyrood elections coming up in May will, if anything, be a bit worse for Labour. But, you you know, I think Kezia Dugdale's fantastic. I think that she will do a good job. It's not going to happen overnight, because I think correcting that is going to take some time. And I would put up a little bit of a warning too. Ruth Davidson, she's very good. Don't write off the Tories in Scotland. Really don't. I think we should be very, very worried about them. Do you want me to answer all the questions?
Or
do you want me to
that's probably fine for now.
Fine. Good. It'll be a long time.
I mean, take one or two.
Just Keir on factionalism. Great name. My cat's called Keir, by the way. On factionalism. Labour's always been a broad church, and it's always been composed of other groups such as the Fabian Society, for example, the Cooperative Party. And I don't think it's unhealthy to have different organisations representing different wings of the party, so long as people always remember that what divides us is infinitely smaller than what divides us from the Conservatives. And we are a united movement and a united party. Now, actually, one of the things I think these groups actually are important in some ways is I think there's a bit of a vacuum of ideas, or there has been for a long time, in the Labour Party. I would say, you know, and this isn't, you know, don't interpret this the wrong way, but one of the reasons a backbencher who very few people outside of politics had heard of became leader of the Labour Party was because his opponents, if you like, had run out of ideas. They no longer had a vision. It was a vacuum. And it was a vacuum that was waiting to be filled. And it was filled. And what I would say is we've had a lot of analysis, and we get all this analysis and sometimes a bit of platitudes, but the danger is that all wings of the party aren't spending enough time thinking of what their vision for society is. Now, that just, I suppose, links on to Linda's point, which is what I was saying earlier on, which is the Conservatives have very clear, sharp messages they repeat over and over again. And the reason we know they passed the doorstep challenge, if you like, is that people and activists here will know this, voters repeated back, sometimes almost word for word, those Tory attack lines. So Labour now, above all else, what it has to have is a coherent, optimistic vision of society, which can be communicated in clear, sharp messages repeated over and over again that people can digest. But just finally, quickly, I want to challenge the audience, because we need to talk about the challenges we face. So I want to hear what your thoughts are on two issues. A, older people. The Conservatives only had a lead amongst people over 44 in the last general election. Amongst 18 to 25s, Labour had a huge lead, but less than half of those young people voted. Amongst people over 65, the Conservatives had a massive lead, but around 80% of those voters turned out to vote. Now, unless Labour can speak to older people and has a coherent message for those older people, we will not win another election. And we have an ageing population. Exactly, an ageing population. And the last point on that, self-employed people. Now, in the next few years, there's going to be more self-employed people than public sector workers. Now, those self-employed people often value their independence, but not their insecurity, not getting loans from banks, lacking social security. Many of them are going to be hit by those cuts to universal credit. So let's have a vision for them. All the time, our message is evolving and changing as society changes. So all of us have to think about those challenges, and if we address them, then we will be able to win and change this country, which is the entire point of our politics.
Brilliant. Thank you, Aaron. There's a lot of Fabian analysis on the older voters' side of that on our website as well. Stella, could you address the factions point particularly? Because, of course, some people have been critical of Labour backbenchers who didn't vote for Jeremy.
I didn't vote for anyone because I was standing in the deputy. So, and I also, my cat's called Asbo, so I don't know what that means either. This is kind of the point I want to make. Look, Keir, it worries me, actually, if we've got to a place where the idea that there aren't differences within the party, or that differences somehow is a bad thing, division, shouting at people, not being willing to listen is a bad thing. But actually, and I speak as somebody who's a member of everything, and frankly found it frustrating during the leadership contest, the deputy leadership contest, when people suggested that somehow it was a bad thing to listen to people that you disagreed with, to want to buy. Look, news to you, Andrew. I don't agree with everything I read in the Fabian Review. I still one that says, okay, where are you coming from? Where are we coming from? How do we meet in the middle? How do we get to a point where we can get something we can all rally behind? Because actually that's how we're not just the Tories. We're not the nationalists. I'm not a nationalist because nationalism to me is abhors everything that I stand for. You know, the idea that we pick winners and losers is what the Tories do too. You're either a hard-working family or you're a welfare scrounger. I think there are bigger gains to be had by seeing the potential in everybody. I think somewhere in Glasgow is the kid who can create the next renewable technology. So it's in my interest that Scotland succeeds because it's in the interest of my local community when they do, just as there are amazing young people in Walthamstow. But the truth is the world is changing. So that division between radicalism and conservatism is about the pace of change that we see. I've got jumpers older than the internet. Tony Blair never sent a single email in government. Think that one through for a moment. Now a third of all divorces in this country involve Facebook. Yeah. Make sure you've got your partner's login. That's my hot tip. There are forces changing our world before our eyes. If we exist as a movement to get the best out of each of us for the benefit of all of us, we've got to be ahead of those things. So there are going to be different ideas about how to do that. And it is right that we hear people's experiences, because frankly, this goes to Linda's point, and it does go to the point in Scotland as well. If we aren't willing to listen to each other and work with each other, what message does that send to the British people who want us to be ahead of these curves, who want, in a very risky, uncertain world, to have hope? Let's be the people standing behind everyone going, you know what, go out there, give it your best shot, we're right behind you, not squabbling about who's driving the car.
Great, thank you. Tom, if you mind being very brief so we can get in another round.
Yeah, I just want to address in particular the point about the need for a compelling message, because I tell you, this is not easy. I just want to address this issue about the need for a compelling message, because it's not easy. There isn't a kind of a sort of lower-hanging piece of fruit which you just pluck off the tree and say, that will solve all our problems. In Scotland, the SNP have this compelling message that all your problems would be solved if only Scotland was an independent country. In the European referendum, you're going to see the Out campaign saying all our problems be solved if only we can leave Europe. It's simple, it's clear, it's compelling. Now, I think that to be a party of government, to have a really effective opposition message, we've got to dig much deeper than that, because we can't just indulge a sort of populist simplicity. And I think that's why I argued in my speech earlier for some measure of continuity, because I think we did quite a lot of spade work in the last parliament, along with the Fabians, about how you develop a social democratic programme for an era when the old tax and spending solutions are no longer available nor adequate to meet the scale of the challenge. Now, I think there's a lot of work has been done. I think Jeremy can take that forward, possibly. But at the moment, I'm not hearing a clear, simple, compelling message. I'm hearing a battle for control of the party.
Thank you, Tom. Right, three questions, but can you make them two-sentence questions, very, very short, and then we'll get back to the panel as well. Right, on this side, we'll go for the man in the sort of purple-maroon jumper, and meantime, we'll go for the woman in blue there, and we'll go for a man with a beard at the top there. Have we found the first questioner on the way? Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, thank you. I'm James Dawson. I'm from New Southgate in North London. And at the last election, I spoke to one of my old school friends who works in IT support in the NHS. He said he didn't trust our attack line of one last chance to save NHS, and what he was concerned was economic stability. And the thing he said to me was basically he felt that him and his family wanted to have enough money at the end of the month to think that they could afford a takeaway. How can we sort of get that idea across to people that we're on your side so that you will have a society where at the end of the month you can afford something as simple as the luxury of a takeaway?
Thank you. Right, and where's my middle questioner? Yeah, yes, that. Yeah, here we go. Front. Have you got a mic? Okay, we'll come back to you in a moment. Could we get a mic down to the woman? Could we give it to the person I initially recognised, and then the man with the beard there first? Yes, thank you. Yeah. There's a mic coming to you.
Oh.
Okay. I'm sorry, we've all gotten into chaos here. Woman in blue first. Okay.
Sorry, I'm Judith Wardle from Witney CLP. You were not only ignoring Scotland, you were ignoring that the local government consequences. We have an election before 2020, we have elections at district level, and we do have Labour councillors, believe it or not, in Oxfordshire. What are the messages we should be putting out on the doorstep now as opposition?
Great, thank you. And then finally, the man with the beard. Speak into the mic and it should come.
Chichester. My question is this. I don't like Trident. On the other hand, I think that to abolish it would be electoral disaster because I'm so old that I can remember the joy of 1964. How do I square what I would like with what I believe to be electorally possible?
Thank you very much. What a good last question. Right. Tom, could you kick off this time?
Can I just make a point? It kind of relates
Sorry,
to
I'm afraid I can't. It's unfair to other
my
delegates.
My question is, how do you
I'm afraid I can't take your question.
In the party that we have
I'm
today?
Not going to take your question. It's unfair to other
if
delegates.
If you're going to ignore young voices, diversity, then how are we going to include the diverse and the minority groups
Tom,
in the party? That's my question.
We have a whole session on that topic, so I recommend delegates do go to that topic. Tom?
I just want to talk to the singer from Chichester. I don't think it needs to be a kind of, you've got all these, you know, great set of principles, but inevitably in order to win office, it's a question of compromise. I think that's part of the problem of the sort of three kind of quotes, mainstream, close quotes, candidates in the last leadership election. They all came from a generation of Labour politicians who emerged in a period of government. So essentially they were already offering not the kind of great hope of coming into power, but the compromise of government. They're offering competence and technocratic solutions. And I do think that the task of the centre-left of the party is to rebuild a principled case for their position, not we would all like to do X, but we're going to offer you Y, because generally, that's not going to work either the electorate or the electorate.
Stella.
My answer for all of you is the same. The point about our politics is individually we can only make limited choices. John, for me, the choice isn't about Trident. The choice I want is a nuclear-free world, right? Collectively, we can change the options on offer, and that is the same at local government when we collaborate together. It's the same internationally. If we're really serious about wanting a nuclear-free world, we use the fact that we have Trident to go and negotiate with others. We don't walk away saying, well, we've done our bit, up to you guys. We work with other people. It's the same in local government. Two-thirds of a child's educational attainment is nothing to do with their school. It takes all of us working together. And in this new world where they're going to have seven different jobs, two of which haven't been invented, the role of local communities, the role of parents, the role of voluntary organisations is going to get stronger in making sure that people can unlock their potential. There are genuine divisions and disagreements in this party about how to do this. I'm from the co-op movement. I don't like nationalisation. I don't like faceless bureaucracies. I like mutualisation. But there is a debate to be had, a genuine forthright debate we need to have with the British public about the world to come and their place in it, and how by collaborating we're going to get more out of it and what that means for them in practice. Let's not just do that within ourselves. Let's go out there and do that on doorsteps at a local community, at a national level in Parliament, and yes, internationally. Because I promise you, that's how we get a nuclear-free world, children achieving what they're capable of, and the social justice we all crave.
Thank you.
I agree with the point about consistency, and I think that whether we're talking about local government elections, whether we're talking about local government elections or whether we're talking about the general election, we have to have, you know, less is more when it comes to messages. One of the things that we discovered in the work that we did for The Guardian, actually, through the last election, where we asked people to talk about what messages they'd picked up, They actually told us that they were bored with hearing about the long-term economic plan. They were so clear. Everybody in the panel played that back. When we said, what is Labour saying, we got dozens of different messages. They just couldn't pick up on anything. At the end, when we asked those that had voted Tory why they'd voted Tory, guess what? Long-term economic plan. So there is a real need for consistency. And sticking with the economic theme and James's point, I think you make a really, you know, there's a difference between talking about what we'd like to talk about and talking about what we need to talk about. We need to persuade people who don't necessarily think the same way as everybody in this room that we will be effective stewards of the economy. They trust us, sort of, on the NHS, but only in the context of trusting us in as much as we would manage public finances well. They don't think that we are going to set out to wreck the NHS. They do worry about what we would do with the economy, and that's where we really have to prove our point.
Great. And final word to Owen.
Well, I mean, just to follow on from Deborah and also James, that point, I mean, in terms of messaging, you know, we pulled our hair out, I'm sure many of us did, when we watched Question Time every single week. I've given up myself for reasons of health. But you know, when they said we're clearing up Labour's mess, how many people moaned every time they said it? But it worked, and we just throw these random messages into the ether and hope something will stick, and it just doesn't work. On the economy, well, I mean, following on from Tom's point about defending record, I guess the perverse irony of what happened is many of us arch critics of Blair and Brown found ourselves in the very odd position of having to defend New Labour's record on spending from some of their own defenders. That we would say over and over again that it wasn't Labour's spending on schools and hospitals that plunged the country into economic disaster, that the Tories backed every single penny that Labour spent on those schools and hospitals, and instead, I'm afraid, that argument was abandoned. And that is the main reason Labour does not have economic credibility in the eyes of millions of people. So we've got to rectify that. Yes, it means defending the record of New Labour, but that means some of those people who are the biggest fans of New Labour doing it as well instead of trashing that record. Now, the other point, just finally to wrap up on John's point, it's a tough one. I happen to be someone who opposes our possession of weapons of mass destruction. I think spending tens of billions of pounds of weapons we will never use, which if we did use would wipe out humanity several times over, isn't financial prudence, to say the least. I think it's a threat to our national security. I don't think it meets the challenges of the future, not least terrorism. But I also recognise it's a very difficult argument to make. And Nye Bevan said that socialism is the language of priorities. And the reality is, when I go back to Stockport and go to the pub, people aren't necessarily talking about Trident and nuclear weapons. So what we have to do, because there is, I think, unity in this party on domestic issues, that is where our priority has to lie. Let's have a debate about Trident, but I think civil society needs to take the lead on that, where we can have a debate, because we haven't had that debate for a generation. If we don't have a debate about the use of tens of billions of pounds of public money on such an important decision, then I don't know what the point, in a sense, of our political system is. But Labour's priority has to be on those key issues. And just to finish up, please, above all else, it's going to be a difficult few months, a difficult few years, not least for the people that this party was set up to represent. But what we have to have is optimism, remembering where we are united on so many basic issues. And above all else, as I said at the beginning, let's not just talk to ourselves. Let's go out into those communities with our ranks so swollen as they are, and go out with an inspiring message, because this party was set up to represent the majority of society, the real wealth creators, working people, the people who keep this country ticking day after day. It is our responsibility to give them a voice, to give their ambitions and hopes and dreams a platform. And if we fail on that by squabbling and divisions, then we fail the people this party was set up to represent. So have optimism, let's have hope, and let's have unity.
Thank you very much. And I'd add to that we need to, as part of that, make the case for staying in Europe, because it depends so much on so many jobs and livelihoods. Thank you. thank you so much to our four speakers and to you for your contributions and participation. We're now into the parallel sessions, so choose your session and make your way to the next room as quickly as possible.
Socialism. Yeah, cheers. Brilliantly chaired.
No problem.
Great contributions. Very good.